Welcome to Starfleet Nerds On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just want to join us for a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Are going to participate on the web? Just go to the talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or look for Starfleet Nerds On Call. You should be able to find us either way. I did a search the other day and couldn't find either one. But that's weird. It should find it. Don't know what's going on. I have to look at something. But anyway. But, of course, if you want the best online experience you want to go to, it's twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And you will find us there. You'll be able to join the chat room. You'll be able to... If you want, you can follow me so you know when the next, the next episode starts. But, yeah, it is what it is. I don't have the purchase. I have not purchased the upgraded or whatever that is. But anyway, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me at sfuoncall. Or you can follow me on Paul France, P-A-U-L-F-R-N-Z. There's no T in that. And, of course, my business account, which is France Games, F-R-N-Z-G-M-E-S. And, of course, I'm part of the Blue Sky movement. So I'm on Blue Sky. If you want the podcasting account, that's sfuoncall.bsky.social. If you want my business account and personal account, also it's francegames.com. So either you can follow either one of those, and I'm back on the socials, you know, going back a little bit, which is fine. You know, I never was into the socials that much, but obviously if I have someone following me and maybe DM me or whatever it's called, Blue Sky, I'm not sure what it's called, Blue Sky, I'd be happy to reply to you. And of course, you know, we have the Discord server. Just a reminder, we have a nice Discord server which has been quite hopping these days, which is good, always good to see. And hopefully we'll see you there. And of course, the lovely podcast, Get to Know Podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net, including YouTube. I'm not sure if you, well, whatever. But the news this week, Gene again has been proofreading the Orion Master Starship book. Cole has still been working on Civil Wars and the ISC book. And Albert was working on battle technology. I'm not sure what that means. That's what was posted. It's the battle technology. What's battle technology? You got me on that one. Hopefully we'll find out sooner or later. Well, I know Steve Cole is going to listen to this and go, well, that's this, you dunderhead. Of course, he also hasn't posted anything on the company blog since Sunday. So there might have been some other things that he's been working on that he has not told the rest of us. I checked. I read all the socials, nothing additional. But this week, I found the online store. We had the FedCom mounted asteroid map panels. Again, there's two panels. It's only $8, and these are extra asteroid map panels to increase the size of your map. Mounted, I'm assuming that they're mounted. They're actually together. That's why they're mounted. It didn't say it in the description, so that is my assumption. Moving onward and forward, actually, I should mention one thing really quick, which is, of course, we do have the cadet training manual is available for people to grab for free as an ebook form if you want to learn how to play Starfleet battles. There's also one which is for the Federation Commander, which is called First Missions. Both of those are available for free. Usually you have to get them from one of the e-tailers, you know, like Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, a War Game Vault. My preference, Warehouse 23, there's no copyright marks or whatever, you know, making sure that people don't copy them and sell them or whatever. They trust you. And yeah, it's annoying to actually have to sign up for some of these e-tailers to get your email address and all that kind of thing. But it's free. You know, The only thing those Ethos are going to do, they're going to be probably promoting whatever products they have for sale that month or that week. Minor inconvenience, I think, especially because sometimes they have some really good sales on. That's why I love Warehouse 23. Because actually, I like some of Steve Jackson's games too, including not Core Wars, pretty good. I forget the one. I forget the one with the big monster tank. I'm sure someone's screaming right now at me. It's like I apologize. When it comes to SB Online tournaments, the 500 BP tournament is still going on. Dana and Eddie had to pause. I am about to get back into it, and unfortunately, I saw that Dustin said everything's screwed up on his side. But I don't think it was him. I think it was his opponent, because with the I'll move on to the next one, and you'll hear it. There's some issues with the client, and if you don't have the latest version, you might you're not you, but your opponent might find issues with that. Now, moving onward and forward to online client stuff, I've released 4.7.3. I would highly recommend every single person out there uninstall their current version and reinstall and install this one. It requires a more up-to-date JDK, but given that there are some real big issues if you have 4.7, 0.7.1, or 4.7.2, those all had a buggy third party. There's a nasty bug in the third party library, which I use for syncing things up. We're sending the things from one client to another client, and it basically you can cause all kinds of grief, and I do mean that. Obviously, if you go up to 4.73, that will fix the issues for everybody else. That's the problem. See, if you upgrade and someone else has not, then you'll see the issue. Because there's nothing that you can do to fix the problem. They have to fix the problem because the problem is on the sending side, not the receiving side. So if the person sending it has a bad version and tries to send it will be broken on your version, no matter what version you're running. No matter what version you're running. If you're running a version like 4.5 or 4.6, it won't matter. If they have an old broken version, then you'll have a problem with them, with on seeing their ships and their information on your side. Possibly some other things. The problem with that bug is it's so deep, 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 deep in the code that it somehow, I'm not sure how it got to the point. I'm not sure how it worked, to be honest. I think we've just been very fortunate in that it's been working without much issue. I'm assuming, because my assumption is that, basically, I'm not sure what happened. Maybe he changed the way he did things. I have not looked that deep into the older version to see why it was working. But I know that I right now have the latest greatest from him. And actually, I actually mentioned to the publisher, the guy who's publishing it, that you need to release a new version because the old version is broken. And it will cause issues with your other library, which depends on your other library, because they have two libraries that are connected. I think he originally had them together and then he split them. I mean, oh, way, way, way we go. But anyway, now they're split. But this one relies on this one, and the one that's broken, it got fixed in the latest code. but he hadn't released it yet. And I said, God, you really got to release this. Because I've been running into issues. And right now, the only way I solve the problem is actually compiling the third-party library from scratch. It's actually open source. So that's one of the things that saved my bacon. And don't get me started on debugging that thing, because it was a pain. I got to work on trying to figure out how I'm going to debug those kind of things in the future. But at the moment, that's not my primary goal. So I'm going to let that pass at the moment. Moving on and forward. Sorry, I went off on a rant on that one. When it comes to library, no updates have been posted on the library, either in SFB or FedCom. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's a little pal friends recommending you to Star from the Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And of course, we have Wah. And actually, that's it for the host for this evening. Big surprise. Well, okay. Most people, this might be a surprise. People who've been listening to me lately, probably not that much of a surprise, especially given how much I gave it last week. It's a gift that it's going to be giving for a while. I am sure of it. I am positive of it. And that is that. Now we're going to talk about accessibility in the client. Now, obviously, I've done quite a bit of work on making what's currently there, more accessible. Little tweaks here, tweaks there to make it so that the frameworks, what's built into Java and the JVM, and what's built in to the operating systems. Well, in the case of a Mac, it's built in the operating system. I don't think Windows currently has built in the operating system, at least to my understanding, they currently don't. There is one with Zach, as I mentioned before. He actually is using an open source screen reader because he's blind. There's another one. I can't remember off the top of my head, and it's really awful. I'm sure there's some people out there just screaming now that they know the product. It's a very expensive product. And usually the reason why people can able to get it is because it is done through government programs. So the people who originally created the screen reader can pay, charge exorbitant prices for a screen reader. And I'm sure that's why Zach doesn't have that one. Or he believes in the open source ethos, though obviously not too much, because I know he's running Windows. So the open source ethos being that all software should be open sourced, so that people can actually see what's written, what the code actually does. And of course, to me, the biggest benefit of being open source, in my mind, is if that manufacturer, that whoever's creating that product, that program, if they go under, if they stop supporting the product, someone else can pick up that and continue on. They can fix issues. Obviously, they can, for people who are still using that product, they can continue to use that product and know. At least there's a chance, especially if it is a product that people enjoy, that it will continue to be available on their systems. Obviously, there's a point which even that's impossible. What was it? I know that actually Microsoft open sourced their version of DOS, which is interesting by itself. Some of that stuff, like, open source DOS, at this point, except for free DOS, there's no reason, and even that, it's like x86 only. We're getting past That all computers are built on x86 technologies. Well, yeah, you know, computers meaning laptops and desktops and that kind of thing. They're moving, not away, but now we're in that in between period. There might be a time when x86 might no longer be used, but my guess is that's going to be long, far, far away. You know, at least these 20, 30 years.
Yeah, well, the problem with open source and Windows is Windows managed to get all those government contracts and all those business contracts, and they managed to put themselves in that position of being almost a monopoly,
right,
on PC hardware and they did it through colleges too, especially through campuses. And
understood,
you know, here's your special student version of Office that you can get for a tenth of the price. You know, they did very well in that. The downside, of course, is being proprietary. Yeah.
I understand.
If Linux could run frickin' Eve and WoW and, you know, it can run everything else I want to run. If it could run those two things, I wouldn't have Windows installed on any of my machines.
Oh, understood. In theory, when it comes to, I'm not sure, actually, I'd have to know more about the architecture, though. Part of it, obviously, is Python. But I'm sure it connects up with actual shared libraries, which are actually source code built for that particular architecture. And, you know, OS. So that's probably the big thing there. Especially since Windows is going to be used DirectX, you know, and so forth. But yeah, the big thing, of course, the biggest issue when it comes to open sourcing operating systems that work closed source, that's not an easy task, and I can tell you that for a fact. For those of you who know anything about it, there is an operating system which was open sourced 15, 20 years ago, somewhere around that time. It was called Open Solaris. Solaris originally was built by Sun, never designed to be open source. So the problem was when they wanted to go and try to open source it, the big issue was that there was some proprietary code that actually licensed from other companies that needed to either go to the companies and go say, hey, can we open source this? Can we actually reveal the source code and have it as part of our operating system and have it so that, you know, we can release it freely to the world? And either they say yes or no. If they say no, then in some cases what they had to do, they had actually recode that part of the operating system to work, to have an actual open source license for that code, you know, so... It's not easy. It took them quite a few years to actually get it from closed to open. And even that, then Oracle came around and stopped making it available. Let's not go there. Hey, Neon.
So you had a topic for tonight.
Yeah, which is accessibility in the client and things that can be done to improve it. Because... as I mentioned to you, Doug, on our little quick chat, I'm zooming quick, before the podcast, one thing that is the case, at least I've seen this, especially on these little devices. What the heck is that? I thought I'm watching a live stream. I think I'm looking at my old one. Okay.
Are you actually streaming?
Oh, this past podcast, yeah. Okay. Don't mind me.
Hi, you guys.
Hey, how you doing, man? Sorry. I am broadcasting, right? Don't mind me.
Oh, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, well, you can hear me through Discord. I want to make sure I'm still broadcasting through Twitch, which I should be. I was starting to watch actually my the recent broadcasts about no activity. Home. Okay, I don't see it. Okay, home.
I see you.
I'm sure you do.
You're looking to your left, right?
Yes, I'm looking to my left.
Yeah, I see you.
Let's bring that up. I didn't want to bring it up, but it forced me to. Which is the stream manager. It's like, okay. Because I want to see the chat room. That's the only reason I'm going to bring it up at all.
You are broadcasting on Twitch.
You know?
Got my you're broadcasting on Twitch.
A nice little bow over here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. And turning the sound on, I can hear our delay and everything. So.
Yeah. I'll, that's why I have the sound turned off on that sucker.
Yeah.
Okay.
So oh, yeah, that part's working.
Okay.
Cool. That part's working. Da-da-da. Back on topic ish.
Yeah. Okay. There's, don't mind me. I just wanted to bring up pad. For any ideas that I discuss, I want to make sure that I do have it written down. Actually, Neon. I forget what your name is.
Oh, I'm Matt, by the way.
Oh, you're Matt.
Hi.
One of our great and ever fearless and ever working and ever thankful for those individuals that help out with the third gen library, you know, the SIB library.
There you go. That's how you know me. Also, I ran a few campaigns back in the past.
Understood. Yeah. One thing. Why don't we start off with what we were discussing earlier on Discord, and that is
yes.
Okay. For those of you who weren't there, which is probably most of you, and that is that. Matt was suggesting changing the range tracker. Give me a sec here. Nope.
Well, it came out with a discussion with the blind fellow, Zach.
Yeah.
And he was trying to figure out a replacement for the line of sight string.
Right.
And I had suggested maybe showing the degrees off of front facing for the ship, where the opponent or other marker or whatever was,
right,
and maybe using the range tracker as a way to display it rather than some extra widget.
Understood. Okay. There. Yeah, because what I wanted to do was bring up the client just so that people can see what I'm talking about for those of you that are actually on the video screen. I'm first going to bring up a room and then I'll switch over. So that will be that. And I'm going to put on two pieces on the board real fast. Let's give me. For those of you who've ever seen my demos, this is normal for me.
I'm not on the video. You mind if I pop into that room?
Sure. And undo movements. Okay, and there. Let's move this guy over here. Okay. And it's just I have read the Fed. I have Clink the Klingon. Some people know who Clink is. Colonel Clink. You remember.
I know nothing. Oh, wait, that's the sergeant.
No, that's Schultz.
Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing.
Yep. that was fun. Okay. Now, currently the range tracker is something very simple window. But it has, you have the from unit, or possibly you can actually specify, if you look at this, you actually can specify a position. So you want to, you can say, okay, how far is like the red counter from position 2511. So you actually can tell it from the position itself.
Wow. I had never actually played with that. That is awesome.
Yeah. Well, I figured that also there's some part of it which some people don't know about and don't really know what that is, which is alarm list. You can actually have alarms. You can do an add. You can do a range alarm and say, okay, if, you know, if the red counter is within, okay, let me first, equal is less than or equal to range 3, he is too close. And this repeating. So basically what happened, in this case, my range alarm, anytime that the clink gets within that range, the alarm will go off and say, he is too close. And you're going to see this again, yes. So it actually, you can actually, if you're concerned about a two units being too close, you actually can set an alarm to remind you, hey, you're too close. You know, so there's a whole alarm kind of, you have range, impulse, and change speed alarm. So you can, it's a feature that not many people use, I'm sure, because they don't know about the alarm list. What's the alarm list? But for the, now, for those of you on the podcast, you know what that is. Now, there's an alarm list so you can actually, for an impulse. So if you want to set yourself on a reminder on impulse 10 to maybe check the positions of certain units or whatever, you know, you can do that. So anyhow, yeah, it's a nice little feature. But okay. On the range tracker, you know, currently, you know, has from and to, it has a range. Now, what was suggested by Matt here was from angle to angle. Now, I'm not sure what that really meant. What were you meaning by that, Matt?
Well, I was thinking it would be an angle off of center line to the ship, wherever the ship was facing. It would adjust for the ship's facing. But the idea was to give a facing to the other marker, other opponent, whatever, and then give a facing from the other opponent too. That way you would know if you were in their arc.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of this whole idea was to make it so that someone could read what their, you know, how far off of center line one thing was and how off the other center line you were. That way you'd know if you were in forward arc or if they were in forward arc.
Right. Honestly, I don't like that interface because it's confusing. That's why if you want in this case, we have an angle from the red to the clink. Okay, that will give you what the angle and the range is. I think that's fine. And if you want from the clink to the red, you can just add another entry which says from clink to red, and that will give you the angle and the range.
That'll be fine.
To me, I think that's clearer and simpler. You know, there's no reason to have both of them at the same time.
Yeah, that's fine. I just thought that someone would want one entry for both, but if you wanted to do two entries, that's fine.
Yeah. Because it's possible that a person might not really care. on the other one, which is in the case of, let's say, a drone or seeking weapon. Do you really care about what the most part? Do you care what the angle is?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Actually. It has a bearing. Which is literally its bearing. That has an impact on what you do. I mean, if it's turned a certain way and you can maneuver a different way, you can force it to do stuff. So everything has some meaning in this game.
Mm-hmm. No, in my mind, okay.
I mean, it doesn't matter what the direction is when you're shooting a drone because it's omnidirectional. But on the other hand, for maneuver purposes, if it's pointed straight at you, you know, whatever you do, it can still follow you. But if it's turned in a certain direction, like say it's A and you're A, and you go back to straight down D, then you can force that to, you may force it to het, depending on how close it is, instead of turning. There is a subtle little something somewhere in it for almost everything in this game.
So. Okay. Well, okay. To a certain degree, you're correct. To a certain degree, you're wrong. And I mean it.
It matters for some things, but not for others.
Right. Because of here's always the thing that I think people, they think that every little movement that they do matters. Whether they do a sidestep or go straight at range 30, whether that matters or not. No, it doesn't. It really does not.
Doesn't maybe not to you, but to them it matters.
No, but yeah, they might think it matters, but it doesn't. That's what we're getting back to play by email, which actually I was thinking about that for Zach. Actually, funny it is, and that is that in play by email, I came across at least one person I was a moderator for that thought every little bit matters. He was out range 30, and he wanted to know if the person, you know, side slipped towards him. What? It at that range, it does not matter that much. If you don't react to it for another 8 impulses, it does not matter. Especially if you're going like speed 20. You know, that's going to be 3 or 4 hexes. It really does not matter. Short of them turning that could matter. Them side slipping a little bit here and there? No. Yeah. You know, people think, you know, that every tiniest
important to details. You is not always important to everyone else.
Yeah, well,
I
disagree that every, even though they think it's important, I don't think it is important, and I feel like that they're just taking it to a certain level. It looks like Matt dropped. But getting back to this.
Well, the flip side of that is if they're side slipping and, you know, it could be a matter of whether they have to turn to do something or not. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd give them their due on that. And they have a right to know. So.
Mm-hmm. No, didn't quite miss it.
So where were we?
Okay. Okay. But anyway, okay. Oh, look like Matt dropped off. I'm not sure why. Possibly either he had to go or he lost his connection. You never know these days of the internet, because it requires power. If you don't have power, you don't have internet. Well, to a certain degree. For those of you, like me, that have learned my lesson, and actually, which is all my network gear has a UPS attached to it. And then, of course, since I'm using like a laptop or an iPad or a phone, they have built-in batteries.
Nice.
And actually, more importantly, when it comes to those UPSs and network, when it comes to my job, actually, we haven't had an issue with it lately, but there was a time where we kept on, every once in a while, having like, oh, a 10-second drop in power here. I'm not sure what was happening, but it dropped for 10 seconds. And then, of course, everything gets disconnected, and then you have to wait for the next, for my work. It took me another 5 minutes to get connected up again. And of course, my wife, she does a lot, she sees clients using Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. And if the internet goes down, you're hosed for that session until the power comes back up. And then you do the reconnecting and all that kind of fun thing. And of course, in some cases, in my mind, you don't want to have it happen in the most inopportune moment, you know, when maybe more of a heated discussion is starting to occur, that it lose connectivity. Some might think it was on purpose, you know. But anyhow, doesn't have to be a client. It could be for your job. Disconnected on purpose, not get it. Okay, now moving back on, going back to accessibility. I think interface wise, it makes more sense just to have a single angle. As I mentioned in the actual Discord chat, one thing I was thinking about is possibly just the shield facing, and possibly, but I agree that maybe it better to have the angle on that, possibly add shield facing to make it a little more understandable. And also, in the case of the, a person who's playing, let's say, you're flying around and you don't really notice that you want to keep like that person off shield number, let's say 2. And you don't realize what shield is facing that your opponent. And if you keep the range tracker on, you actually can also keep an eye on, okay, what shield is it? Because obviously you can use the line of sight string for, normal, for sighted people that can, they can do that. But again, you have those distances and so forth, and people might take those long shots at you, like when range 30 occurs and you show a down shield. They might take a pot shot at you just because you have a down shield towards them, and get a couple more internals. So might be good to have both of them. At the very least, I agree with the angle part of it, because it gives you an idea of what angle it, how close it is. And because the one thing I think it was mentioned in the discussion, which is the idea of, okay, if which is, if you noticed on on the video that the D7 here is off shield number 3 of the Fed at range 3. I mean, it's right off there. It's down the hex row, or right on the oblique, as it's called. Now, if the Klingon was here, one hex off it, saying having it so that the Klingon could say, oh, it's one hex off, like the center line, would be good. Well, that's when things get complicated when it comes to figuring that out.
Yeah.
Bearing. Because, having the angle gives you an idea that, okay, yeah, they're not directly down on that angle because of, let me see, this would be, okay, this is 0, that would be 60, that would be 120. So it'd be somewhere between 60 and 120, probably like 110, maybe. I'm not sure. I've not calculated this out, guys. So at least it tells you that you're in between that angle there. There is a possibility, and that's one thing I was actually, it was mentioned that, I mentioned actually thing last week too, which is the idea of, this one, and me. Go here and let's go to fire weapons. Okay. Now, you have the red, and then the target is the clink, but it has a range here. And I, in theory, because of this thing, the Fire Alpha feature, actually knows whether that weapon is an arc. Now, this is for ordinary arcs, not for special arcs. For example, the forward extended phasers on the clink, these three phasers, those have a special arc that they can fire directly aft on the Klingon ship. Problem, the client doesn't know that. So, and therefore it doesn't take that into consideration whether it's an arc or not. In theory, in that case, it is an arc because it has those special arcs, but the client doesn't know about those special arcs. So, and those are like also the waist phasers, these phaser twos. Those are also ones which are, is it the phaser two? No, it's, yeah, no, these phaser ones here. Yeah, the phaser ones, which are on the wings, not the waist phaser, the wing phasers, which have those special arcs where they're blocked by the pylon for the one warp nacelle. You know, the client doesn't handle those things. But as I said, there's one thing I could add to it, which is the ability to know whether, you know, list out on when you're announcing fire, whether it is actually, oh, Zach's here. Whether it actually is an arc or not. I can add that to the fire weapons chart.
I don't know if I'm supposed to speak. I apologize. But
no, you're supposed to speak. That this is a open forum.
That would be incredibly useful. Yeah, just for some context, I am a completely new player. I just kind of bought the game more or less on a whim because I have heard of SFB, and so I thought I would check it out. And the client is one of the more accessible ways to do that. So.
And I'm trying my best to improve that.
I appreciate it.
Which I'm glad you actually are here, Zach, because I think your input would be a great, great help in this discussion.
Of course.
Okay. Now, I had some ideas running through my head today. At least they came up to mind, and invariably I forgot some of them. Because of, like, I was in the middle of church, so I'm trying to pay attention to what's going on and not think about the client. But one thing that definitely came to mind, which is, and I definitely want your input on this, which is that in some cases, I've wanted to do some of this stuff a while back, but I'm not sure how accessible this would be. Which is basically the idea of in the chat room, you know, the chat area, and where you enter in your chat, having commands, text-based commands.
Oh, absolutely. I have had plenty of experience with games that do that, or at least seen some proofs of concept that it definitely can be done, depending on the kinds of commands, like slash, I guess, like slash commands to do whatever with pieces, or so I don't have to interact with the main UI, which can be kind of annoying.
Understood.
Yeah. Understanding.
Yeah, there are a few at the moment, which I don't remember them off the top of my head. I think if I recall correctly, I think that one. Yeah. Like one of them is just like slash fire, which will bring up the activity decision window with fire.
Firing. Right.
Right. Yeah. And slash, I think, and slash activities, the same thing. It'll bring up the activity window. I think there's some more, but I forget off the top of my head. Because it was when I was getting into the whole idea of slash commands, doing certain things for different, they're called plugins, and that's what they are. It's actually the architecture of the client, actually a plugin, like where you can design.
I noticed that there was support for like FND and like that, although I didn't investigate that very thoroughly.
Yeah, I probably should remove that just because of it's kind of unfinished, and I've never played FNE, so I'm not sure how well it is. I talked to the person who helped me with the FNE portion, but it, you know, it got.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously haven't either. In fairness, I haven't played a full game of anything since, honestly, situational awareness is one of the things that I kind of struggle with at the moment, with the way things as they are. Although I did realize last time I was on that the range dialogue does seem to help a bit with that. And obviously I'm still playing cadet scenarios, so there's a limited number of things that can happen in that context.
Understood. Yeah, that was the one thing that I was thinking about, which is how much, because a lot of the stuff when it comes to on the map itself is useless to you.
Yes.
Because it's really not for accessibility. And to be honest, I don't know how to make it accessible at the moment in time. I'm sure I'm missing something simple.
If you're talking about the mechanics, I'm not super familiar with Java accessibility.
I don't think you would be.
I
know what I want it to do. I want it to that the different counters, you can actually do a tab and it goes from counter to counter to counter to counter. Basically, in the context of Java, it's called focusable.
Right, focus order. Right. So that the order of counters is logical-ish. And yeah.
Right. So
I have been through my own minor efforts working on creating an accessible hex mapping tool for my own benefit. And it is basically just like using JavaScript and Aria and web technologies, which I am slightly more familiar with. Mm-hmm. But basically the way that it works is that you use a cursor to navigate from hex to hex, or you can pull up, you can do things like pull up a list of pieces and it'll tell you where they are. And it finally seems to be behaving correctly in terms of calculating firing arcs, knock on wood, and so on. But I mean, yeah, that's obviously a very side piece. And if I could avoid having to deal with two separate interfaces, that would be great.
Oh, understood. Yeah, that's why I was thinking, you know, I think I mentioned to you that I think a lot of stuff could be done via the game control.
And that I have discovered. Honestly, the biggest slightly frustrating thing is that if I tell a ship, for example, to move forward or to turn, keeping track of did it turn or not is tricky because I have to go back to the log window and check, did the log update, and is it doing what I think it is? And half the time I press the wrong button, so it turned the wrong way or whatever. So
right. Oh, yeah. Understood.
It's a matter of tedium rather than inaccessibility sometimes.
Right. That's why I was talking. I mentioned in the Discord server that about the chat room, the chat area.
Yes.
Because currently, at least mine, when it comes to VoiceOver on the Mac, when it gets to the chat area, it just reads everything in the chat area.
Yeah, and I don't think it does the same thing with NVDA, my preferred Windows screen reader.
Right.
Screen readers do things very differently, and I think that VoiceOver just maybe has kind of subpar performance in that area. It's been a while since I've had a Mac, so I don't, unfortunately, have one to test with.
So, but what's your experience in the chat area then?
It's been pretty good. I mean, I don't think that when I was in it, I didn't run into anything. NVDA basically just doesn't read anything other than, obviously, you know, this is your chat. This is the chat window, but it doesn't actually read the contents of it unless you navigate over them, which is a good thing. Right, Same thing for like the log window.
I think that's what you're calling the log window is the chat
area. Is the chat area? Oh, then, yeah.
That's where you have your discussions. That's where it puts up, you know, from people send you text.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that's where everything is logged also.
Yeah.
You know,
It doesn't read, it's not verbose, not too verbose or anything. It's fine.
Okay.
On the Windows side. So,
That's one thing I noticed with Discord, that each entry, is separate.
Yes.
That's
Discord, because Discord's an Electron app. They can do things differently. So yeah, that might be harder to do.
I'd have to change the way the chat area would be instead of actually having an area, which basically what it is, it's like a whole document.
Yeah, it's just a read-only document.
That I'm constantly updating.
I mean, it doesn't bother me at all. It's perfectly readable as is. VoiceOver, like I said, probably just behaves a little differently. That is unfortunately just something that screen readers do.
Right. So, yeah. And I'm thinking about your problem with, you know, when it turns, you're not sure which way it turned and so forth. So you don't have any feedback on that turn. And I'm not sure how I can solve that problem.
Understood. And I think that might be just be a matter of familiarity. I eventually found an old, tutorial on your website for version 2 or something, which listed some shortcuts that I wasn't previously aware of that I could use for moving around with the hotkey with control 8 or whatever to move forward.
There's actually, I did some updates to some of the videos, which actually I have a few lists on my YouTube channel. Not for SFU on call, it's for my account, The Andromedan, which has different videos for how to use the client.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure if those would be helpful or not.
I'll have a look at some point. Generally, videos are not my favorite way of consuming content.
Understood. See, that's the reason why I'm hesitant about that, is because I'm not sure how much I've voiced versus assume people can actually see them, because obviously when I do a podcast, I have a video for certain things, but for the most part, I have to assume that people are listening and not watching.
Yeah.
So I have to describe things a lot more than previously.
Yeah.
Because actually one of the slash commands that I thought of, which I like the idea, and I'm not sure how useful it would be, I call it radar.
Right.
It'd be like slash radar space, and then you give it a unit name.
Give a range, and then it would.
Range
or a unit.
Well, I call it radar because what happens is that it would, from that unit, and then it would give you an output of, okay, you have this unit at this range and this angle, this unit, this range, this angle, possibly even the speeds of those units.
That would be very helpful because, that's something I've been trying to add to my, that's something I've been thinking of adding to my hex map utility as well, just a way of like getting a, call it target scan or whatever, mm-hmm. from unit X to range 10 or whatever for X's. Because yeah, it would be helpful to know where things are. Mm-hmm. And it would definitely improve situational awareness a lot, I think, because that's kind of what I, a bit of a struggle at the point, is figuring out what's where, and especially as it changes from impulse to impulse.
Understood. Actually, the funny part is, when I thought of that calling it radar, my picture in my head was actually sonar from, like,
submarine movies.
Submarines. Yeah. Beep.
You can have it call out bearing.
Yeah.
Bearing
and range.
Bearing off unit wise.
Yeah.
B shield. At range 12.
Exactly.
Hello, new person.
No, I'm old.
Yeah, Zach. This is Doug. He's on here a lot. He lived like an hour away from me.
Ah. Yeah.
Pardon me on that. On my coughing.
Radar is something that I've thought about a lot. And I guess, like, in terms of like access to information, getting the, like, I think the weapons charts are generally readable-ish. I think I figured out eventually how to read them. Like, some of the tables are a little confusing because it's not clear what a header,
right, what
the intended headers and.
Yeah, most of the intended headers are just the range, the ranges.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess the SSDs, we fortunately solved that problem, I guess, more or less. Fortunately. Yes.
Yeah. Making them so that can be text based.
Yeah. Yeah, that works. Fortunately.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you haven't listened to it, so you don't know. The funny part is that the text-based SSDs were broken for, I'm going to have to say, somewhere between 5 and 10 years.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah.
Well, wow.
Happened ever since actually, I'm not sure how long ago it happened. I think when I switched them to the third-gen SSDs, then that's when the text-based broke, in that you couldn't use it to actually play the game. You couldn't edit or have... You can do damage allocation, that's fine. The problem is you couldn't edit it to do, like, repairs.
Ah.
And when it comes to the client, if you don't have a user account, you're not paying the account. When it comes to regular SFB games, if a person is using a ship that is part of the library,
right,
they won't see the SSD. They'll see the text-based SSD. So in this case, unless LeBlanc is the person who reported this to me, what he was wanted to happen was have it so that somebody who doesn't have an account can act like a demo account. At that point, they could actually still play the game, but it just be text-based.
Right.
You know, and at that point, I had no reason to really put that on the top of my list of things to fix.
Fair enough.
And obviously, then you came along, and that came to my top of my list. Was to have
well,
so
well, I'm glad I can, contribute, however, unintentionally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done a whole lot with them, but they're readable. They're infinitely more readable than the graphical versions. So fine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Those are for you. I think it would be more of a hit miss kind of thing. Cause in theory, with the graphical one, you can figure out what's there. It just means you have to go click, 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 click. And if you click and it actually pops up a window, you hit. You got to hit. And that post,
right.
You can see what's in that box. But
right.
you can't know if you hit all the boxes.
Right. It just seems fundamentally stupid to waste
like the minefield game.
Minutes of my life doing that. Right. No. Why do I have to? Yeah. But fortunately, I don't have to. So.
Agreed.
I think the I think the biggest thing, honestly, is just kind of getting familiar with all the rules and figuring out how to like firing arcs. I think I finally theoretically get a handle on it's stuff like figuring out where not seeking weapons but direct fire weapons hit. I think that's kind of another area where line of sight or sight strings are useful.
Right.
I guess like
mm-hmm.
yeah. Thinking about procedures that the manual kind of assumes you have eyes for.
Right, right. Especially the firing arcs. Yeah, because part of the manual will be this firing arc chart, which shows you in a hex, you have the center hex, and then say, okay,
60 degree, they're 60 degrees, like bounder. What's the word? 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
The word is escaping me, but I mean, segments.
Arc.
Something like that. Yeah.
The word is arcs.
Yes. Precisely. Yeah.
But
it's.
Yeah. And it shows you that six, like for the case of. For right, the right angle,
right side at like, yeah,
which and that one's going, that's a 60 degree arc going out shield number two and going out shield number three, which are hex side. If you have the metal hex, if it's on
right.
the two, basically the right starts at those two
kind of
hexes,
yeah,
right beside it, right beside that hex. Because you can picture that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for those two hexes, on the right hand side, that's you keep going straight out those two directions, and you got the right
infinitely
arcs.
Long. Yeah.
Right, like they go out infinity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, and then we have the forward arc, which is basically front arc right and front arc left. Well, sorry.
The two hexes those in the front of the ship, the front. Right.
What was it called? Left front. Left front.
Yeah. Left front. Left right. Left front. Right front.
And right front are together make the forward arc, which are straight ahead. Yeah. That hex that's right in front of the ship, and the one next to it, but to the right side or to the left side, and goes out
And the forward, and obviously the combined arcs are like shorthandy because. It's easier to talk about forward arc than it is about left front, right front, separately.
So. Right, staying together because it makes it easier because then they together. It's like forward extended. That's the forward arc.
That's 180 degrees around the front of the ship. Or that's
no, not 180. That's not 180. That would be front half.
Front half.
Sorry. Front half is the 180 degrees.
Right.
Now. Front extended. Okay, I remember this. That'd be
120?
That'd be 60, 120, 180 plus 60 is 240.
Oh, 240. I thought it might be 240, but it wasn't sure. That seemed like a large measurement.
Yeah, it's 240 degrees. It's pretty good arcs.
Yeah.
Now the fun parts ones are like the LP and RP, the 180 degree arcs.
Plasma arcs.
Yeah, plasma arcs. Yes,
I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've heard about them, but I didn't have the book. The book just says see the diagram, which is helpful.
Yeah. Basically, LP and RP. Okay, in the case of RP, it goes okay. If you go to the to that hex that's right in front of the ship. Right. There's the hex line between the hex that's in the front of the ship and the hex that's right to the towards the front, but on the left hand side. So you know,
okay,
so they're all connected there. Right between those right. two, there's a hex line. There's a line between those two hex boxes. If you go take that line and you have it go all the way out,
right?
That is the left hand side of an RP arc.
Ah.
Now you keep going around to the right hand side of the ship. That right hex that's towards the back of the ship. There's the next hex over, which is at the very behind. Behind the ship.
Right.
So between those two hexes, that very right hand, the right hand side, but towards the back of the ship, and the one that's directly aft, that hex line there. So it's this, so the arc, the 180 degrees going from hex line to hex line.
Ah.
So it's
kind of complicated.
Yeah, kind of complicated. Yeah, yeah, because it doesn't use the hex hexes themselves.
I was asking the other day how common that was, just because it seems like it might be harder to code for my purposes. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
it's when it comes to plasma ships, it's quite common.
Yeah,
the three arcs, the three major arcs. There's one other arc, and actually, there's three marks that are used the most: RP, LP, right. and FP. FP is just it's just front half. It's just for plasma.
Right.
There's RP, which is very rarely used because it's a plasma that goes. The rear half.
Right of your ship.
Oh. No, the rear half. Ah. Sorry, not RP. That's it's FP, LP, RP. What's rear of the ship? What that's called?
RH.
Usually they have a P. I don't remember. It's been so long. And then they got the really weird arcs, which are basically like LRP or RLP. I think basically it's the reverse, but where it centers on the firing out the rear of the ship. But those ships that have those are really large ships. And so those kind of arcs going out the rear of the ship when it comes to plasma is rare. You do have sometimes with, the arcs left side and right side, you know those?
Right.
Right.
LSRS, yes.
Yes. They're 180 degrees centered on
the right side of the ship or the left side of the ship.
The center line of that is the hex in front and the hex behind.
Right.
Those are the centers. And anything on the right-hand side, you know. So in theory, if you have something that's one weapon is right side, the other weapon is left side. If you got something right in front of your ship, you know, center line, right in front of the ship, you can fire both those weapons on that target.
Ah.
So
yeah, you were as I recall when I popped in, you were talking about that theoretically you could add the firing arc info to the decision dialogue. Or something like that?
Well, you know, I was talking about something which actually was discussed in the Discord server, which is something that you were assuming that the client did, but it didn't do. Which is that on the firing weapon dialogue.
Yeah.
That, you know, you choose a weapon. And then you could choose a target, and then it would tell you whether it was actually in arc or not.
Right.
And I was actually explained this last week on the podcast, which is basically that is doable. except for as I say, except for the special weapon arc cases, which not gonna happen. Not gonna happen, people. Not gonna happen.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure you haven't read into this yet, which is the Klingon D7 has these three forward extended arc phasers at the very front of the ship. Those phasers can also fire the hex directly aft of the ship. That hex, so you go straight the after the ship and go straight down that hex. You can fire.
So like they can fire directly behind it.
Mm-hmm.
If a ship is facing aft or whatever, then they can fire. Now that's interesting.
Yeah, so at range one, actually, they're 360 degree arcs. If you think about it,
that's what I thought. I wasn't sure if that was actually.
Yeah, well, that's at range one, but at range two, it's not quite. There's additional hexes which are missed. But anyway, but those are special arcs that are part of that ship. So and the Fit has the same kind of thing, with their I think their light. Some of the phasers on the not in the cells. The little circle part of the ship.
Saucer,
thank you. Saucer part of the ship. But you know that can't handle it. But I'm not sure if you've seen it. There's a button called Fire Alpha.
I have, and I've never used it, but I've seen it.
What that allows you to do is you fire from a ship, and then you select your fire from is on the left hand side. I'm not sure if that's accessible at the moment. I've not checked it to see if I've connected the two. Then you can select the target, and then from there you can see Fire Alpha, and then there's some options to exclude certain weapons that you've already fired. Weapons that fired in the last 8 impulses or whatever. It could be 12. It could be whatever. Exclude weapons that fired this turn. Sorry. The top one was not that. Not fired. It was already selected, i.e. you've already selected in that firing
selection. Activity phase, right.
Yeah, you already selected it. And say, okay, don't, you know, exclude that. Don't worry about that. I know it's an arc, even though you might not know it's arc. I know it's an arc. Okay, and then you can exclude different selected weapons and say, okay, well, I don't want to fire my disruptors. I don't want to fire my phaser ones or phaser threes. It will fire them all. And then you click okay, and then what it will do is, it did not. Okay, from red to the clink, and that should work. It's not working. Okay, well, I have to see why that's broken. But it should.
Fire Alpha.
It should work. It should be able to select all the weapons that are in arc for that unit. So it actually does do the calculations. And that's why
It just doesn't display that information at the moment.
Well, it should have. It should have selected it for firing, and then
But only if it's in. It's called Fire Alpha because it's the. What's the term? Alpha strike.
Yes, i.e., fire every single weapon that's available to fire.
Right.
Because most of the time, you'd actually. One of the weapons you exclude, you would exclude phaser threes.
Because they're short ranged and they don't do anything.
Right. Even though they're within range 15, you can fire them. It's just that the range like 9, what's the point?
Yeah. Fair enough.
There it goes. Yeah. Yeah. That's weird. Yeah. From the clink to the red, that worked. Huh. Missed something. But yeah. That actually does work. I got it to work. I'm not sure why it didn't work the other way. Maybe I forgot to do something. Okay, we got another one I have to ban. Ah, fun. Gotta love it.
Sorry?
Oh, nothing. It's Twitch. Get these goofballs who go, oh, you know, they fly by.
They're bots.
Yeah.
They're just bots.
Yeah.
Bots, of course.
So now, Ben, another one. I'm not sure why they hit me, just because I'm very low traffic. If I'm lucky,
but you're open.
That's true. I'm actually doing something. Yeah, so you know that's one thing I wanted to add, because when you said that, I went, you know, I really should do that, and I think that definitely would be a great help to you.
Yeah, and honestly, I think eventually I'll probably just have to find a time to get a game in with either with someone more experienced or with a fellow new player or something, just to get really used to it. Although I do appreciate the solo single player as a way to test it out without causing anybody annoyance.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great benefit.
One random question. I don't know. Is the one of the charts I'm not sure about is the impulse chart on the board?
Yeah.
I think I understand what it's supposed to do, but it's kind of hard to follow.
Oh, that was another thing I wanted to think about doing, which is on the EA. There's nothing I can do about the EA table at all. Nothing I can do.
Right.
When it comes to SFB, because you have to fill it out. It's numbers.
That in itself is fine, I think.
No, the speed plots. Just, the one thing I was thinking about for speed plots was the possibility of adding a field, which basically, instead of trying to do the clicky clicky thing on the impulse chart to select your speed plot, to actually enter in what your speed plot is.
Just type like a number. It would be just like a constant. If you're going at speed 8, you just type 8 or whatever the.
Right. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could type in speed 8 or in the case of, okay, you're going speed 8 for the first in impulses, you'd say 1-8 equals 8. So
That's right. Because of the way that. Yeah.
Comma. 32 equals 12.
Right. So you go 8 for the first 8 impulses, and then whatever.
Do you think that would be useful?
That would be helpful. Okay. Less wrestling. I did wonder about plotted movement. Is the game is the client assuming free movement, or?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Because I know that that's kind of in the. Kind of, I know that SFB used to do pre-plotted movement for everything or something, but I don't know how long that.
Oh, Zach, please don't get me started.
It's ancient history.
Don't give me a start on that.
Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
The closest you come to that is play by email.
Ah.
Which I've done. Man, it's been a while since I actually moderated. Been a moderator for one of those play by email games.
So we don't speak about that.
Well, we don't speak about it because the thing is, I love pre-plotted movement. It's the whole idea of pre-plotted movement is just, it gives me joy. That's why I liked a game called Starmada. That's one of the options that they have is actually pre-plotted movement. And originally, the first time that they actually took this SFU background material and they ported it to Starmada, that you had to do pre-plotted movement.
Right.
which I the thing is, I agree with the whole idea of pre-plotted movie. I totally agree with it. But I know people like to be able to make all those fine changes, which in theory, if they actually were live, actually on a starship, they would not be able to do.
They would be able to. Right.
Because you don't think that fast. You know?
Right. I can sort of see the appeal. Like, I can see the appeal of both sides of it. So, yeah. It's tricky. But I guess as a new player, free movement makes a lot more sense.
Right.
Running through the impulse chart 32 times or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Understood. And yeah, there was a moment in time in the great far, far past at this point that I wanted to make it so that that people could use the SWB Online client to actually play asynchronously.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and that...
Admittedly, asynchronous play is something I've been curious about, too. I did see that there was some play by email this
right.
stuff on the website, but I don't know how active that scene is as much as any.
I don't know how active the scene is myself. My guess is that it's not very active. When SFB first was available on quote unquote online, playing by email was the only way you could play. There was no live client.
Yeah.
I was playing using CompuServe.
Right.
For those of you who know anything about some history of computers and the internet.
Back in the dark ages.
Yeah.
Email addresses were
you had to go farm your own bits out of the ground. Yeah, got it.
Exactly. But you know,
I had to put the pterodactyl to the record player.
Yeah, that's one thing. That's why I have that opinion, which is I think people worry too much about the individual moves, which don't really make that big of a difference overall about what the outcome of the game is going to be. They really doesn't matter. And that if you ever play by email, that's one thing you learn is that you have to let go, because otherwise it's going to be a very slow and tedious game. If you want,
but you're going back and forth. Every impulse, hey, I'm moving this way. No.
Yeah. And remember, you've got a live person in between. And the whole idea of play by email is that you do a speed plot. Then you have these conditional orders, which you can either conditional orders, which are basically playing that, okay, if a drone gets within range two, fire a phaser one at it.
Right.
And it'll automatically do that.
Yeah, it's a different animal.
Or you can have does a break. Okay, my opponent's ship, if they turn, stop, do a break. And that's fine. And depending upon whether you move first or they move first, they could either be an unresolved movement, or it could be okay, they moved. Okay, but now you can, if you want to, you can fire, but movement's done. Movement's complete. You know, so it'll stop in that segment.
Oh, this is play by email. So obviously, play it doesn't really apply.
Play in person are two very, very different animals.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yep. Okay.
The likelihood that I ever played in person seems pretty slim to none. But
I appreciate the
distinction.
That would be quite a challenge, I would think, for you.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, even more than online play already is.
But... Right, exactly. Exactly. At least with online play, you've got a little more information coming at you versus, okay, the counters are here and here.
Yes. Ooh. And now they're here and here.
Yeah. And geez, the only way I could think that you could even play was you'd have to have a special hex board.
Yeah, and I've been... People mention that here and there, and I keep wonder about that, but I don't know how 3D printed, how feasible it would be to do something like that.
Yeah, understood. Because what you'd want to have is have it so that the hex lines are raised.
Yes.
And so that you,
and ideally maybe so that there's some like slots or something so you don't move pieces around like on a chest, like the chessboard that has squares you can put pieces in. So
right. And the difficult part about that would be, when it comes to SFB, is that you're allowed to stack counters.
Unlimited, yeah. So, of course.
So,
how much of a thing is that? How much of a... I wasn't sure how often the stacking, or lack thereof, actually came into play. The lack of a limit actually came in to play.
Shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 10,000 kilometer hex, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Figure. I bet the only thing that might be make a difference is if the entire hex is taken up by a planet.
Fair enough.
Right. And
but
I was just mostly wondering how often. Things are in the same hex.
Well, the biggest thing that always happens is drones. You have a stack of drones, which are all moving together towards a certain target.
Right.
So that's the one that most happens the most. Obviously,
you have counters that are like swarm counters.
Right. You can do
so it's one. Yeah.
So you can cut down on the number of counters.
That's true.
And if you wanted to take a page from the Federation and Empire side of it all, if you have too many ships, you could theoretically use a separate area thing to put all your ships on.
Right.
And put one counter on the board to say this represents that group of ships.
Right.
But that only really works if that group of ships are all have the same bearing.
And are going the same speed.
Realistically, I would imagine that people probably don't play with, like, this doesn't seem like it's the kind of game that is suitable to a dozen ships on a side or whatever, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
the amount of tracking you'd have to do seems a little excessive.
Yeah, the most interesting one is when you actually have people play with miniatures.
Ah.
Because in theory, the ships can be in the same hex. Like when it comes to SFB now, there are other versions which they're not allowed to be in the same hex. I gotta check, but I'm pretty sure Federation Commander, actually no, I think you can, but then there's a limit to the stack that you could actually have, in which case it starts interfering with fire. It's weird. But anyhow, okay, well, Zach, Doug, I need to start...
thinking of the old Zaki stuff?
Yeah, that's true.
The Zaki miniatures rules.
Hmm. Yep.
Just wondering, guys. The thought. So.
True. I trust me. I was quite saddened when Shapeways went out of business. Like, I'd like to have more counters. I'd like to have more some miniatures. Not that I would buy that many, but they're when it comes to doing demos, when you actually want to play in a crowd, miniatures are great.
Because I can imagine. Easier to see.
Right. they draw the attention of people.
Yeah.
Yep. They're eye catching.
Yep. Yep. That's the whole
and
idea.
It's an instant recognition of the genre.
Yeah.
Especially when you were the Enterprise out there and the Klingon ship.
Yeah. You were starting to say something and then we got sidetracked by miniatures.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, I'm gonna have to shut things down because Lord knows it's already getting late. It's almost 11 o'clock my time.
Can I throw a good quick chat. Plug out?
What's that?
Can I throw a quick plug in, Paul?
Of course.
Gamers of Summer, Labor Day weekend in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. on the Facebook thread, I threw up a set of images real quick today.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, version A, version B of the official posters, and one that's a small handout. They're all meant to be printed out on 12 by 16 cardstock. And the one that's multiple images is meant to be cut up and given out. So if anybody wants it, it's there. And that's the Gamers of Summer Central PA Gamers Convention on Facebook. So there you go. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
I also put in a print order for some people who are close to me that might want to pick some up and not print them out themselves.
Understood.
Okay, that was my plug.
Okay.
It's not too early to give me a list of what you would like to have listed for Gamers of Summer.
Understood.
Never too early.
Never too early. Okay. Well, Doug, you have a good night.
Thanks for having me on.
Always. Zach? It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
Okay, well, you have a good night.
You too. Okay, bye.
So, had a nice little discussion there about some of the things for accessibility. Obviously, this is a discussion that could go on for months. Don't worry. I don't plan on having this as a topic for the next coming month. So don't worry about that. I will continue work on in the background, and when I have new features available, I will put them. I will show them off, and I will definitely announce them when they're available for general use. So I'm hoping that'll improve. As I mentioned at the beginning, I feel like especially that, you know, these little suckers, these little phones, have been. When it comes to accessibility features, those things that make things more accessible for others also help those people who don't have those challenges to make a program, or in this case, a device, a lot easier to use. For me, actually, there's one thing, I'm not sure. On the iPhone, it has this little, I have this little dot on here. Actually, this is long ago and far away when I've been using this thing, which is for exactly for accessibility, so that you don't have to do the sliding and so forth. And I prefer it that way, so I don't have to do everything. It actually brings up a control panel, and it makes things a lot easier to use for me. So I've been using that for years, ever since I found out someone was using that. So that's an accessibility feature that I'm getting benefit out of. So that's why I brought it up. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.